So what I told you was true. From
Sci-Fi Malady
point of view.
Date, March 6th, 2021. It has been 16 years since the Abrams virus appeared, and writing has only gotten worse. In a matter of a few seasons of Lost, after watching this show, all people could do was steeple their fingers and say, "Mystery box," whilst coming up with some unsatisfying and ultimately inconclusive ending to stories. That is not to say that the writing was any better, with hyper-coincidences, bigger threats that made no sense, a lack of explanations, and appeal to nostalgia if all other forms of rational thought could not prevail. The cure, as we know, was almost worse. Now we have the Scott Sci-Fi Malady. We went from spouting nostalgic mysteries to outdated jokes that belonged in the infantile gutter of a high school locker room. Carol Baskin utterances have gone up 23%, and that documentary has not been relevant since March of last year. Subjects 1 through 23 have all failed to cease this line of humor. The cured Abrams virus was almost worse than the disease.
Guys, you're never gonna believe this. Down the street, my neighbor put in an 8-person jacuzzi. There's an orgy going on, and someone is dressed up as Carol Baskin with an ET glowing finger trying to dive into it. Watch out for Carol Baskin! Sci-Fi Malady, symptom 187. I am legend. I am entertained.
Welcome back, sickies, to week 2 of Malady March, and we are reviewing the film I Am Legend, along with all sorts of other films or possibly shows about contagion in kind of a, I guess you would say, sick homage to when this whole mess started, particularly with the lockdown. So we are back, like I said, today with the Will Smith 2007 film, I Am Legend. And the first thing I would say about this film is that I wanted to see it back in the day. I never did. And I kind of wish I had, because I was entertained by this. I enjoyed this movie. There are a few parts that I thought were a little kind of dumb. We'll get to our rips and picks. But overall, I kind of did like this film. And there was actually some parts where you really feel bad for Will Smith in here, Robert Neville. You, especially concerning the dog, where you're just like, oh, man, how, oh, poor guy. And that's really, it actually, if I could put it anyway, it's, I didn't know what would happen to Will Smith's character, Robert Neville. You know, you expected him just because it's a movie that he'll live, but there are parts where you just think, this guy might not actually make it. And it did keep me in suspense. I don't know about you two guys, but it kept me in suspense. And that's a good thing. So
I don't know if it was suspense that kept me intrigued in this movie, but it was certainly entertaining. And I tip my hand on this maybe a little bit of where I'm going with this. I think that what elevated this script was Will Smith.
Oh,
you, I mean, this is one of his better, and he's a great, great actor. And this is one of his better roles, I think.
For sure. For sure. Thomas, initial thoughts?
I didn't see this one in theaters, but I saw it like right after it came out. And it holds up just as well as I remember it. It's kept me, I don't know if edge of my seat, but definitely scooted forwards pretty much the whole time.
For sure. I agree.
You look at this, it's a very minimalist cast. I mean, it's mostly Will Smith and a dog on screen for the majority of the film. And then you bring in
over half the film is just him and the dog.
You bring in the mom and the kid, and then you've got some small sequences with him and his real life daughter and and a couple of the army guys. But I mean, it's an amazing film considering how small of a cast you had to pull this off. I mean, it's
right.
And it's powerful. It's a powerful film that emotionally hits you, and it doesn't go over the top to hit you emotionally. It just, it's very, very simple moment. It's Will Smith's daughter giving Neville's daughter, giving him the dog, the puppy, and Sam will protect you and keep you
safe. Sam protect daddy.
Yep. And it's the mom and Neville's wife blowing him a kiss and him blowing it back and them knowing that this is probably the last time they're ever going to see each other. And it's selling it in the powerful acting in the little things.
Well, I mean, even the way I guess spoil the film here, but I mean, how his family dies. I mean, even that
right away.
Yeah, but also in a way that's not cheesy in a way.
No, it's feasible.
It's feasible. It makes sense. And it's powerful.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out. I mean, that's so I get it. I understand it. And I also have a bit of a rip. I think it was ridiculously plot irresponsible of the army to shoot missiles at the bridge
before they cleared the area.
That's definitely going to be a rip on my side for sure. Oh,
absolutely. That one missile was able to take out an entire bridge, considering it normally takes either multiple precisely placed bombs or a demolition team with precisely placed explosives,
which is what they would have done.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Much cheaper and more effective than spending a missile on a jet fighter. That's way more. That's not cost effective at all.
No, you would have had demolitions teams placing explosives on there precisely and then blowing it correctly from a distance.
Absolutely.
But
just to fly the jet fighter there is a monument, is a lot of money. Why would you do that when you can just get a demo team from the Army, get the Army Corps of Engineers to do it?
Plus, it's the most ridiculous timetable ever. They're quarantining the island in 30 minutes. If you're not off, you're not off. What do you mean? I have permission to get off because I'm Lieutenant Colonel Robert Nevin's wife and daughter, so I can get off the island. They're not going to keep you on the island if you're 2 minutes late to the helipad. Unless, of course, they've got a perfectly timed up, non-abortable mission with some military fighter jets to missile the bridge into oblivion. Whether it's clear or not, it's
well, not
the
just
most
that,
idiotic but, thing ever.
Well, then you also go, okay, so one missile apparently. What if that one missile wasn't enough? Oh crap, we didn't have a backup.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah, so that, well, that's clearly one of the rips, and I'm sure we'll be revisiting that, but I like to quickly get into one of the notes. We like to do this now in Sci-Fi Melody, bring up fun facts about the film rather than the nitty gritty cost this much, yada, yada, yada. The first one was that just a couple interesting facts about this film. Originally, Guillermo del Toro was approached to do this film. He wound up doing Hellboy 2 instead, but the vampires or hypocenes as they're called,
I was about to bring up that this was originally a vampire book.
Correct. Yeah, the novel that's one of the points we're going to talk about. But the vampires wound up being inspired by the movie Blade 2. In fact, director Francis Lawrence wound up deciding to use CGI on the vampires because he didn't like the prosthetics. But I mean, that's kind of a ding because it is early 2000s CGI, and you can tell. It's not horrible, but it's not the best. So,
it's still very good CGI, though.
It's not 1999 CGI by a long shot. So, but in fact, I think that the bite. Doing the CGI, the budget leapt significantly. So, yay. there was supposed to be an alternate ending to the film because it was alleged that the alpha leader of that pack of vampire hypocenes, they were trying to save the girl that Will Smith had kidnapped. So it was kind of a rescue mission, I guess. They never wound up doing that, which I'm kind of glad because that was
You can find the alternate scene out though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's easy to find, but I don't think I would have appreciated that one too much. So this film, go on.
I was going to say, if you watch the alternate ending, I kind of have problems with both the endings, but the alternate ending I have even more problems with because it takes away a lot of the power from it.
Okay.
And it's just kind of this, it's good and bad, but I would say more bad.
Okay. So the epic flashback scene involving the collapse of the Brooklyn Bridge cost a whopping $5 million. And it involved 14 governmental agencies, a 250-plus crew, 1,000 extras, and 160 members of the National Guard. Took 6 nights to film. I guess it was worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, maybe you guys didn't notice this, but the Batman v Superman was at Times Square, the movie poster.
Oh, there was advertisement placement all over this film. Oh, my God.
And how.
We're going to drive a sports car.
Yeah, the beginning. For those of you, any of you sickies that love, just a couple more. For those of you sickies that like the band Faith No More, its lead singer Mike Patton wound up doing the creepy screams of the infected. And if you ever listen to the song Epic, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So, allegedly there's a sequel, by the way, called A Garden at the End of the World, but haven't seen any heads or tails of that. And I guess this will be a good one. Ridley Scott was originally supposed to do the film back in 97, but it got scrapped. And at some point somebody got a real bright idea to have Michael Bay do it, and thank God they didn't, because it would have been horrible.
Yes, apparently, well, the bridge would have blown up 10 times bigger. They would have dropped a nuke on the bridge.
Oh yeah, exactly. That New York City would have been nuked for sure.
Do you know who in 1998 director Rob Bowman wanted to play Robert Neville?
Who's that?
Nicolas Cage.
Oh. Wow. I'm glad they did not go that. And if we had had Michael Bay, it would have been Nicolas Cage.
I can't imagine Nicolas Cage. Like, he's not a terrible actor, but I can't imagine him carrying a film like this, which needs that gravitas. And
an hour of just Nicolas Cage? No.
No. No, no.
The only thing I can think of worse is if Michael Bay and Nicolas Cage was working together.
John Travolta. It could have been John Travolta.
It could have been, no.
It could have been worse than Nicolas Cage. But hey, let's go back and talk about the alternate ending for a second. And I actually think the director's cut ending is the better ending, and it makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Okay.
So they followed him home, and it makes a lot of sense if they're trying to find the kidnapped Dark Seeker and get her home. Because one of the things that gets lost in this movie, and I think it got lost in a rewrite and I couldn't understand it, is why is Fred moved? Fred is moved, and Fred is set up as bait for Will Smith and Robert Neville, and he steps into the trap that he had used to capture that person. It's the exact same trap. And
that's obvious.
What this was supposed, but they don't ever tell you who moved Fred. You're supposed to figure out that it could only be the Dark Seekers who moved him.
That was implied.
It's implied, but then it's never followed up on. So it's supposed to show you that they're not stupid. They've just become hyper aggressive, and they're still thinking human beings in a certain way that have just lost a grasp on societal norms and morality. It makes a lot more sense from that scene if they're coming back to get the girl that he kidnapped, and then he exchanges them and they go away. That ending links to that scene. But when you just throw that scene out there and then don't develop it, as I was watching this movie, I had a problem with the fact that that scene was never developed later. Now it makes sense, because at first I thought it was just a scene to get the dog killed, but or to add some drama. But it wasn't. It actually was a scene that was setting up to that other ending. And then that ending got, I think, I'm guessing that ending got scrapped. Because to me, artistically, the director's cut ending makes a lot more sense and is the better ending of the two. Plus, you've got Will Smith looking at all the pictures and realizing in that moment that I wasn't experimenting on animals. I was still experimenting on human beings who we just couldn't communicate with. And it adds a depth to this. Those two things, looking over all the photos that he kept of every one of his human experiments, and the scene with moving Fred and that trap, it pays off a lot better if that director's cut ending is kept instead of the one that we get.
I kind of understand where you're coming from, but the problem I have with it is that when you are looking at these, I don't know if you can quite call them humans infected. They are definitely not acting in a human way.
And well, Will Smith even makes note that they've given up their behavior.
This, the last minute humanization of them is really weird.
Well, that's my problem with the, that's my problem with the Fred scene. If you're going to take out the director's cut ending, then I think in that rewrite, then you need to take out the scene of moving Fred, and you need to probably take out the scene where he's looking at the photographs that he's kept of all of them. I think at that point you started something and then you never tied it up. If you're gonna if you're gonna show me throughout the course of the film that these beings, because they don't do anything else in the course of the film, including the last storming and attacking of Neville's house, that indicates that they have any intelligence in anything other than feral animals that will attack and kill on sight, because that's what they do.
Except they do kind of show that the Alpha does have some kind of intelligence during the attack.
Yeah, and they, again, they're hinting at that, and then they never develop this alpha male. He's just the biggest idiot wolf.
And when you look at this disease, and I did look into this disease that was supposed to be happening, it makes a lot of sense that these humans don't have much left of the humanity, because this would cause, other than the hypersensitivity to UV rays, this causes pretty much a constant migraine, because a huge pressure on the brain, incredible heat. I mean, the person's burning up.
Yeah, and their hearts, they're respirating super fast.
Because they need the oxygen. And you're basically hypersensitive to light, burns you. You've got dilated pupils. You have incredible headache constantly. These people, infected, are hyper aggressive, probably, and in constant pain.
I think
it's like, how can you go, these are, it's like, dude, they are in some kind of state of undeath.
Yeah, but there's still, so there's another scene that I think loses something. It makes more sense if the director's cut ending is applied. Neville makes a note of social behavior changes, and he says, an infected male followed me willingly into the sunlight today. And he says, maybe it's lack of food or desperation or further social decay that made him do it. Or maybe it's because they know that he's kidnapping and murdering their fellows. And they see him as the arch enemy that they need to risk their own life to take out for the betterment of their own warped community. It makes a lot more sense if the alpha male is leading an attack on his house to get back one of their own at the end, because they know who he is and what he's doing. All of that seems like this movie was playing towards that ending the whole time. It was. And then it got changed at the end. And then they didn't have time to rewrite and reshoot all those scenes leading up to it. And that's why some of these scenes to me seem like these seem like important things that were thrown out there and then are never followed up. That little tidbit about changing social behavior, that's not put there just for craps and giggles. That was supposed to mean something. And the fact that there's an alpha male was probably supposed to mean something. And the photos on the wall, yeah. and it's kind of like all just red herrings.
I mean, if you go with the ending, you know, the alternate ending, that all then falls into place and makes sense.
Yep. I think it's a better movie. The alternate ending to me makes it a better artistic movie.
Artistically, yes. I the problem I have with it is that in that ending, I just don't like how it ends. I'm talking about the final before the credits.
Where he's looking back at the photos and wondering and seeing them all as humans or?
No, as they drive off.
Oh.
They drive off out of the city and the final radio broadcast is we're on the road to this new place. It doesn't end with him ever curing this.
No.
It ends with basically humanity on the run from this disease and no hope.
Which is far more realistic.
Oh, absolutely.
And to me, I mean, still disease, the better artistic ending.
Yes, this disease, I mean, honestly, there should be zero survivors of this disease. I mean, it kills pretty much 90% of the population, which right away should destroy any kind of hope of survival anyway. And then the survivors are now being hunted by feral, you know, humans. It's like there should be zero survivors. So,
you know, it's interesting you're talking about the ending, Scott, because I want to touch upon the differences between this film and the 1952 book of the same name. And a lot of it lies in the ending. So in the 1952 book, in this film, it was posited as the virus that started this all was the cure for cancer that eventually became a virus that...
it was always a virus.
It was always a virus, but they, as the doctor made it sound like, we turned it into a good guy, but then it turned out to be a bad guy and killed everyone. And yeah,
because as soon as you release a virus into the public, there's a possibility that someone's DNA affects it and mutates it. Yeah. So this is, again, we're watching scientists and movies just be horrible.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be
their job.
That's going to be a rip I'll have later. But so in this film, it's due to a virus that's changes people, and those who manage to survive it become these essentially vampires. Whereas in the book, it was born of war, and somehow the virus, let's see, it spread not so much by vampire bats or anything like that, but by bacteria bearing mosquitoes from dust storms in cities following the recent war. And that wound up wiping everybody out. And Robert Neville is the sole survivor. And by the way, in the book, he's in L.A. He's not in New York. Small thing there, but basically it creates vampires. And in the book, there's two kinds of vampires. You have the ones that were dead and came back that are truly undead, and they're the rage of hall monsters. But then you have those who became vampires while still alive, and they wind up being afflicted the same way and having the same limitations as vampires, but their conscience. And what winds up happening is Neville, in his daily forays, kills so many vampires that there's a society of conscious vampires that start hunting him. And they send a woman named Ruth that gains his trust. And when he tries to test her, she captures him. She hits him over the head, captures him, and explains to him that we're building a new society with these conscious vampires, and you can't be in it because even though we respect you for your research, you've been killing us. And we don't like that. So what they did was Ruth basically says, we're going to take your research. Here's some suicide pills. take those, and that's that. And also, Neville decides he's willing to do it because if he, at first they're going to let him leave, but then he realizes, nah, they're not going to let me leave. They're going to kill me. So the ending is ironic because he takes the pills, he looks outside of a prison he's in and looks at all these vampire faces looking up at him, and he realizes that I am the legend, because one day regular humans will be a legend just like vampires were a legend for us. Huge difference and departure from the film.
Well, here's the difference, though. In the book, the vampires are actually intelligent and actually have...
There's two kinds. Yeah, there's the
right.
The ones that, the crazy ones that were dead and came back. But then the society of the intelligent ones that he was also killing, and he was killing vampires indiscriminately.
Right. But the society of vampires are intelligent. In this movie, I mean, the most intelligence we see
is the guy, the alpha male.
Alpha that somehow sets up, we see them set up a trap. I mean, they are feral.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
There is, I mean, even the most intelligent one of them, even in the alternate ending, they are feral.
Yeah. So
it's not like they're going to build a new society that will leave any kind of functional in any hot. I mean, they're living underground in any dark spot they can find.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to crumble. Things are going to fall apart. It's not like they're going to build a society here.
Right.
Well, it's going to be a pack of wolves, basically.
Yeah, basically. Whereas in the book, they're trying to build a society, and they just had to get rid of Neville because he was a threat to them. And what's interesting is, too, Neville in the book isn't really a scientist. He's just a guy who he believes he was immune based on a vampire bat bite he had experienced earlier in life. But he had to kill his own wife and kid because they were becoming vampires. And what he does is he just spends his days going around staking vampires. Whereas in the movie, he's trying to cure the virus. They took a much more, I guess you might say, a pandemic approach in the film than they did in the movie, in the book.
Well, yeah,
which is fine. And in the book too, Neville's alone, so he struggles with a lot more loneliness and mental issues related to that. Will Smith does in the film, but only after he loses his dog.
Well, I mean, even I wouldn't go there. I mean, the beginning does set it up. I mean, he set up mannequins.
It does, yes. And but
to talk to,
the thing is that helps him, but the dog is still a slight tether in that the dog can react to him.
Yeah, like he's nervous to flirt with the mannequin in the back of the video store.
Oh, I'm not saying he's not experiencing mental illness.
Oh, yeah. He's clearly started to lose it by that time. Like you see, even after he meets the other people, he's like still,
the dog, I don't think, is keeping him sane. I think the routine is keeping him sane.
Oh, no. The dog was keeping him sane. He's trying to commit suicide by taking on as many of them as possible on the night when the mom and the kid show up.
Right.
Yes. I think that was the final nail. My point is the dog's helping, but I think the routine and him doing, you know, eating breakfast, working out, doing these things in a routine and working on a cure is helping him.
Right, but the dog is central to that routine, because even when he's like eating, he's telling the dog, eat your vegetables, don't shift him around. He's treating it like his kid.
The dog is the last link to his family. And that's the last part of his family left. So when the dog dies, he's truly lost everything. He's lost the last link to his family and his humanity.
Right. And that's why he goes to the mannequin and says, say something to me, say hello. Because even if all a dog can do is bark, it's reacting to me. It's a living creature that reacts to me, loves me, and shows me appreciation. It's something. I got something. Take the dog away, the mannequin doesn't react.
Right. And I'm agreeing with you, Mark. What I'm saying is the dog was the final nail. He was losing his sanity. The dog was helping, but he was already in mental decline.
Oh, yeah. He was one dog away from losing it all.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this first half of this film is pretty much setting that up of a guy in a complete isolation with just a dog, which, yes, a dog is going to react, but it's a dog. It's not another person. There's only so much a dog can do.
Yeah. And the guy's just Neville struggling the whole time. But in the film, I would say really kind of captured the sense of loneliness and despair a lot better than the book did. The book gives you a great sense of what it's like to be alone, but the film depicts it. And also it shows you that need he has for the dog. When the dog runs into that dark building, and he chases after it because this is like his kid. Even I thought, normally I would rage and be like, no, you don't do that. What's wrong with you? But no, in this case, I was like, yeah, I get why he's doing it. And I was scared. I was actually afraid for both of them.
And, you know, it's not unbelievable behavior. Real life story. My brother, when he had his house out in North Ridgeville, was sitting out having a fire at night at like 11:30, 12 o'clock. And they didn't him and his buddy didn't know, thought his dog was inside, but they didn't know if his dog had snuck out. And they heard a dog make a really bad yelp. And they looked back and just saw like coyote eyes back there. But the first thing they did was run towards the coyote eyes and the dog because they didn't know if it was his dog. And like, mm-hmm. So your first instinct, it might not for everybody, but that first instinct is to go run and save your dog. And, you know, that coyote might have killed them. And they ran to go get the dog. And then they realized that, you know, the dog was in the house and they're like, let me get away from this coyote. But he's positive. And they're like, they both have said something got eaten by a coyote that night because the dog was barking, barking, barking. And then you heard that yelp and no done, which is pretty horrifying.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing with that dog. When it finally died, first of all, it did protect him. I think it was Sam. Sam, she did protect him. And when she's injured and you realize that she's becoming feral when she's infected, you actually get choked up. You're like, oh, man, no, not Sam. At that point is when I really thought he might die.
Yeah,
he might actually die. He just lost his dog. He might lose it now. If they're willing to kill the dog, they're willing to kill him.
Absurdly, right. I think that's Will Smith. Maybe not absurdly. I think that's Will Smith's best acted scene in the movie because it's the way that he cradles the dog and he's singing everything's going to be all right, scratching the dog's head. And he's kind of half smiling as if, you know, and it's that last moment of affection between him and what is his only friend left in this world. And then you see him just realizing he pulls the hair out and he checks the other places and he knows that Samantha's going to turn and he's waiting for every moment that he can to comfort the dog as long as he can. And then it's got to feel like the ultimate betrayal to him, too, though, because he's literally strangling, feeling his only friend in the world die in his arms.
That was a heart-wrenching scene, by the way.
The first thing I did, I'm going to be honest, I put the movie on pause and I went back and found my dog and gave her a hug and told her she was a good girl.
That was a heart-wrenching scene.
He sold it very well. But this is the thing. This film took on many hard issues and did some hard science in it. I mean, designing a disease, you know, a virus to cure cancer, it makes sense. I mean, that's what we're trying to do right now. We are trying to do that.
Yeah.
And the virus they chose to fight cancer is not a bad one choice either. I mean, they chose measles, which, yes, I mean, Okay, measles is, I'm not going to say harmless, but it is one of the viruses that does less damage to the body, except doesn't, because it also has weakens the immune system for up to 5 years. So it's one of those things where it's like, of all the diseases you could have chosen, you probably could have chosen a better one, but sure.
I don't know how hard the science is in this film. I mean, look, I can't say that they're not looking into using a virus as a delivery method for a cure for cancer, but I think what they're more likely to do, maybe I'm wrong, I would guess that what they would do is expand upon the biologic type medicine that they use for, like, I have Crohn's and the new medication I have is a biologic, which instead of shutting off my immune system in my entire body should prevent my immune system from attacking my GI tract, they give me a medication that is targeted to bind only with my white blood cells in the GI tract, so that it only shuts down my immune system within my GI tract and leaves my immune system functioning in the rest of my body normally and healthily to fight off invaders. If you can find something that you can basically use a targeted chemo, you can't use radiation only in one area, but if you can find a cure that will only kill cells in one targeted area of the body, or even find a way to bind to a to the mutated cells that are cancer cells and ignore the healthy cells by looking for a protein marker, then you can cure cancer far more effectively. It's not the problem of killing the cells and killing the cancer. It's when you kill the cancer cells, you're killing the healthy cells, and you're hoping that you kill all the cancer before you kill the patient. And that's our cancer treatments.
Right.
If you can use these targeted drugs that are looking for protein markers and identifiers are only active in certain areas of the body, you know, imagine you could treat cancer without attacking the heart with radiation. You could kill those cancer cells a different way.
Yes. My point is they chose a disease that is contagious through surfaces, through the airstream, and the ways they were scanning for it was actually a way you would check for it. I mean, you're checking the fine vessels in the eye to see if there's damage to them, because the measles goes after would go after veins in the eye. So you could definitely scan someone and check, oh, your eye is damaged. Those small vessels, you probably have it. So, I mean, the ways they were scanning, the ways it was spreading, and I mean, even the contagion rate they mentioned in the film of 90% it's exactly what measles contagion rate is. So they at least did preliminary basic research in this movie. It's not completely Hollywood out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, The other thing, well, I might as well just explain another difference between the book and the film. In the film, Neville's a colonel who's working on the cure. And that's believable. And he's decided to stay at ground zero. But we do see a few flashbacks, unlike Neville in the book, who had to stake his wife and kids. In the book, he managed to get him out to a helicopter for rescue.
Movie.
That's the movie.
Book.
Yeah. No. Thank you. In the movie, he's trying to get him out for rescue, but then something happens. A nearby helicopter gets caught up with a bum rush of people and it crashes into theirs, and he loses his wife and kid pretty much right away. And he's just left with a dog. And then they kind of don't tell you what happened in the intervening time, except he found a way to barricade himself in his house and everyone else got infected, apparently.
Or eaten.
Yeah. And so he pretty much goes around during the day, either looking for supplies, or he goes to the pier every day at noon and broadcasts, "I'm waiting for you if you need help." That is until he goes there on a suicide mission at night after he loses his dog to a trap set by the alphas, and he's rescued by a woman and a kid named Ethan, who are on their way to a safe house and a safe colony in Vermont. And Will Smith, unlike in the book where he where the woman winds up being a vampire who captures them so she could kill them and they could build their society up. She winds up trying to convince him to leave, and instead Will gives her the cure, because Will was experimenting a cure, or Neville was experimenting a cure on a infected individual. It was working, so they gave he gave a sample of her blood to the woman, hid them in a coal chamber, and blew himself up with all the other vampires in the original ending, or the ending that made it into the film. And then the woman and Ethan just wound up at the colony because we have to wrap this movie up, so they just got to Vermont. And we presume everything's going to be okay?
Yeah, the ending that made it in and the ending, alternate ending, both end on a kind of a meh ending.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were trying to wrap it up because at that point, the legend, in the book, the legend was that he was the last of the humans. In the movie, it was he's the legend that started the cure, possibly. So,
well, also, I mean, this doesn't feel like a long movie, but no. If it continued on for much longer, it would be, because it's starting to get up there in length. So it's kind of like you have to wrap this up. So,
oh, for sure. Well, plus it's mostly about him. So that's where you would need a sequel. So I guess with all that in mind, we could get into some rips and picks, and I'm sure Scott has a deep meaning in there.
Worst safe zone ever. Now look, I watched the scene where they attack Robert Neville's house. That wall around that town isn't keeping those things out at night. It's not tall enough. I watched that thing shimmy up a pole in 3 seconds, up a light pole to get to the top of it. Those things can friggin' jump like a Jedi on steroids. No, that safe zone isn't holding. It's going to get overrun. That's terrible. Yeah. Robert Neville spent all this time zombie-proofing his house, zombie vampire-proofing his house, whatever it is, you know? He shuttered all the windows. He set up a perimeter explosive device in case things got through. He's got guns hidden throughout the entire house. He never thought to do anything to the roof. He only thought to resecure certain areas. He never thought that these things might punch their way through the roof.
Yeah. Also, he never actually really, I mean, fortified the house too well. I mean, you look at it and you go, oh, you just put some barricades over the windows. That's about it. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. And I guess he was trying to cover his scent by dousing the steps somewhat in what?
Yeah, I get that.
Or gasoline.
That made sense. Or vinegar. I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess his thought was that they would never follow him home somehow. The dog would never bark at night. That's a great dog. It's never going to hear something and bark at night. He'd spent all that time making his house secure. He never made a real panic room that was secure. He never gave himself some kind of escape, and he never thought to seal off the roof.
Apparently his laboratory where he's keeping these test subjects, if one of those test subjects ever escaped, they could easily get out because that plexiglass he was hiding behind.
Bash it a bunch of times.
Yeah. It seems pretty weak if this alpha's breaking it pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, they rip through the roof of his house, just punch through it. But those chains on the gurney kept it, you know,
right,
restrained.
Also, they managed to bash through a solid steel door that's deadbolted on multiple sides, just like nothing. And it's like, yeah, these things aren't being kept out by a single, you know, chain lock or anything. It's these things go through anything.
Yeah. Also, their head is still made of bone. It's still made of bone. I believe there's still a brain under there.
Would they be cracking? Did they suddenly get a skull made of steel?
Right. Like as he punched through the roof, he probably should have broken every bone in his hand and arm, and it would have became useless.
I mean, these creatures, as we can see, are probably under immense pain constantly, have adrenaline flowing through them, so they could probably still go, but I mean, there's certain points of where the body, no matter what, can't continue, and traumatic brain damage is one of them.
Yeah, so I don't care how tough you are or how much you don't feel the pain. If you've got a compound fracture of the arm, which you should probably have after punching through a graphite shingle and wood roof, it's not going to be useful anymore. The muscle's going to be torn, and you can will that arm to work through the pain. But I mean, the muscle's not connected, vampire or not.
Right. These creatures are at a level of durability that's unbelievable.
Well, also, and they're not supernatural in nature. So you can't, you have, since we're going viral and biological, the muscle's not attached.
Yeah. Also, if we're going on what they do, which is supposed to be some kind of, quarantining and military op, this is the worst run military op I have ever seen to get the city quarantined.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting people out with apparently no warning. And the way you do it is off of helipads.
Yeah.
What? Also, you apparently are using civilian helicopters. You have military helicopters, but
there was
we'll use civilian
helicopters. One of them was Coast Guard.
Right. That we're just going to use, I mean, the one that crashed was looked like a news helicopter.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
It's like you're using civilian helicopters at this point, which that's just great idea. Also, I mean, you literally have the people up against it. You don't have any kind of first line, second line, third line. You just have a line that's right there. It's terrible planning. It's like, I mean, the missile we already brought up. I mean, that's a stupid.
It's like the politest, unruly rioting crowd ever.
Yes. Yeah. Please let me on. Oh, please take my child. Oh, okay. Never mind.
I'm just going to scream angrily.
Yeah. To this point, it's like you would have multiple lines for the simple fact you would have an unruly crowd. Also, I mean, let's be honest, this is also the nicest the military has ever been in a desperate situation when they're supposed to be defending against possible attack is, oh, please wait, hold up, we can scan again. Oh, also, hold up, please come this way. That is what?
Yeah, that's very polite of them.
Yeah, and you probably should have scanned her a third time. I mean, it's 50-50 right now. One came back negative, one came back positive. And also, why doesn't everyone else get a rescan if the machine is that prone to error?
Well, why didn't that spark a riot?
Well, that, and also, the military. The military is not, it's a hammer. It's looking for nails. It's not going to be that polite with people when you're supposed to be checking them, scanning them, moving them around.
Well,
they were, I mean, it was like, oh, no, negative. Please come this way.
He does order them Lieutenant Colonel Robert Neville to rescan.
Yes.
But that's the only reason she gets rescanned.
He doesn't have authority then. He does not have authority then because it doesn't matter what your authority is. Because it's like, okay, congratulations, sir. You don't have authority. You're not in my direct chain of command. I'm in operational command here. I don't care if you command me to rescan her. She's not getting rescanned. You can go on.
No, you are correct. You are correct on that. But I think it's just military brotherhood. This is one of our own. Let's one more time. But
right. But
it's rippable. She should have just passed the first time. It's a scene that makes no sense.
Yes. It's like, just let her pass and don't do the whole, oh, she didn't pass. Just let her pass. Why did you have to add this whole thing? Stupid.
It's a miracle Sam lived 3 years. Robert Neville is an idiot for letting the dog run around off a leash. Because even if you have a well-trained dog off a leash, what happened was going to happen earlier. But even if that doesn't happen, in the first scene of the movie, we watch the elk he's trying to hunt for dinner. Why he's hunting when he has all that food at home, I guess you got to keep hunting, but whatever. we're trying to show this is a world where I got to hunt my dinner. A freaking lion jumps out of nowhere, and then there's a standoff between him and a male lion and the cub, and it doesn't work that way. They don't travel that way. But the lions have escaped from the zoo, and you're just letting your dog walk around. Your dog's going to become a meal for the lioness the next time it's hungry, and it's a much easier target than the elk.
Well, not just that, but you also have to realize you're absolutely right. For one, we see he's turned the Central Park into a farm. He's walking through, like, you know, cornfields at a certain point. He's growing food, but he's, I mean, for one, this is the worst possible idea ever to stay in the city. You're in a city where how many people live in New York City and they all die? That means how many dead bodies are there? That city is stinking. It is a cesspool of diseases.
Diseases you're not immune from.
Right. And you're not getting fresh water. You're not going to get, you don't have tap water. You don't have all this stuff. There's shelf lives on medicines. There's all this stuff that somehow he has a full stock of food and everything. And he's going into houses, raiding them. It's like, I get some of it, but also at a certain point, get out of the city.
Yeah. And also, you know, listen, Sci-Fi Melody public service announcement, and I feel comfortable making this public service announcement because the zombie apocalypse or vampire apocalypse can never happen. But if you ever find yourself in the zombie or vampire apocalypse, do not get on every available radio frequency, advertise your location, where you're going to be, and tell everyone that you can provide food and shelter and security, because you're going to be dead and they're going to take your food and shelter and security for themselves. You're not going to make it 3 years. Someone is going to hear you, and you're going to be lucky if they just ask you to take them home and shoot you dead when you get inside your house and it doesn't end up going Hannibal Lecter type stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that, but also he somehow has survived 3 years without getting any problems. I mean, we see within a couple of days, he manages to get himself seriously injured twice, and in a way that he has to get sutured, has to have antibiotics, has to have all this stuff within 2 days. And I mean, he almost crashes within the first couple minutes of the film.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. We're gonna survive the apocalypse to kill ourselves driving like a moron.
Yes.
Through the streets, through the deserted, wrecked streets of New York City.
In a sports car. Which, by the way, he has an actual vehicle, which is perfect for this, in his SUV.
Apparently, you need a Mustang to chase elk, or Ford just paid enough to get the Shelby product positioned in the opening scene.
Let's be honest, it paid, because it makes no damn sense why you use it. For one, gas is a scarce resource.
Yeah, why are you wasting it? Plus, during that hunting scene, all I kept thinking was, you have a rifle. Why are you insisting on keeping up with them? They're out in the open. Pick one and shoot.
Yeah. Also, how about you don't run up on them? You hunt them. You don't run into the middle of a group of them in a sports car.
Hit the gas and hit it with your car.
Well, actually, that could have killed him, which hitting a deer with your car could kill him. But I mean, at this point, he's almost killing himself anyway, because he almost runs into cars anyway.
Yeah, SUV can't keep up with deer. To keep up with deer, you need an 8-cylinder rear-wheel drive sports car.
Yeah, which again, amazing how clear those streets are in New York, which
I was just thinking that too. Like when he drove through those on the sidewalk with the scaffolding, I thought, wow, it's a good thing he knew that there was absolutely nothing in there.
Yeah. And also in a city where apparently everyone's evacuating and you would think every single car would be on the road when this started, I don't see too many cars. Right.
And it's just insulting because they take the time to do what The Walking Dead didn't do and make the grass taller than his head. So the grass kept growing because no one is cutting it.
But yeah.
Then they need to have a Michael Bay car chase scene. And maybe it's the one scene Michael Bay directed and wrote for this film before it got scrapped and they moved on to another director. You need that scene. So the streets are clear. Yeah, it became insulting.
I mean, the contrivances of buildings being, you know, still intact. You have a perfectly intact video store.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, yeah, a lot convenient. Of pipes would have burst in the winter when it froze and thawed.
Well, not just that, but your roads would start breaking down. Pavement would break down. Streets would break down. Water would break. Pipes would start breaking. Leaks everywhere. I mean, another thing is just the idea of stagnant water.
Yeah.
You would have water everywhere being just stagnant. You would probably have an infestation of mosquitoes constantly in that city.
He has enough water to bathe his dog in the tub.
These are all legit points, except for a 90-minute movie, we can't afford to nitpick too much.
Well, I can keep going, but does anyone want to throw out the biggest nitpick of the entire film?
No, because I want to get this one out of the way first. Otherwise, we're going to derail. At the very beginning, when the doctor was asked, did you find the cure for cancer? And she replies with, yes, we found the cure for cancer. No doctor or scientist would ever say that, because they know darn well, we found a cure for this kind of cancer in these 10,000 people.
Right.
That's the most, absolute most you were going to get out of them.
Right. You're treating it like it's all the same disease. So does your cure for cancer work on lung cancer, breast cancer, and lymphoma?
Exactly.
How about leukemia? No doctor
would ever say that. They would, if you would have said, so you found the cure for cancer? Well, no. They wouldn't say that.
A competent, smart doctor wouldn't say that.
Yeah, well, we need them for the movie. We needed them to not be that.
Well, I'm just saying you could probably find a case where an incompetent, dumb doctor would actually say that.
Yeah,
because
maybe.
Because he wants to sell this thing up.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I saw him. He's on Alex Jones's show all the time, supporting those supplements.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, you can find incompetent doctors who are selling complete garbage out there.
Hi, everybody.
It works for everything.
Let me tell you about I lost it.
Well, Scott, before we get into the few picks before we rate this thing, what is the biggest rip?
Vaccines don't work that way. It's not a vaccine. Yep. It's a cure.
It's a cure.
It's a cure. Yeah. A vaccine doesn't you don't get a vaccine and get healthy from the vaccine after you have the disease. In that case, you got to beat it on your own. It's too late. The disease is already there. You didn't have the antibodies in there to knock it out in the first place. Also, Neville is immune. So his blood can't synthesize a vaccine because it has no antibodies because he's immune.
But if he's also immune, you can find what's causing the immunity and possibly get a cure out of that.
Right.
But
what he did was
he never goes off of that route either. So they never experiment with his immunity, and also it's not a vaccine, it's a cure.
Right, it's some type of serum that acts as a cure, which is amazing because we really don't have things that kill viruses. We have things that are antibiotics, but a virus, we treat the symptoms and the reactions, but your body still got to kill the virus because, quite honestly, I'm going to play doctor here. I don't think we fully understand what in the world a virus is. It is and isn't alive. I mean, it's a pretty messed up thing when you think about it and what it is. And we're not sure how to kill it because is it even alive? How do you kill what's not alive?
We do have antivirals, but they don't exactly do what people think they do.
Right. It's not like an antibiotic. If you got strep, I can give you an antibiotic that's probably going to kill the strep. If you've got a virus, no, those antivirals aren't going to work that same way. Not as guaranteed.
No, the antiviral is designed to treat some of the symptoms to also help your body basically fight it. It's not designed to actually kill it as much as to help your body. Antibiotics, yeah, that'll just wipe it. It'll also wipe a bunch of good cells out too, but it's going to kill all the bad. Unless, of course, you get the one drug-resistant strain. That's a different issue. But yes, this is definitely not a vaccine.
Yeah, Hollywood doesn't understand how a vaccine works, though. They always treat a vaccine as if it's a cure, and it cures the sick already. And it doesn't. They don't understand it.
Okay, so what about some picks? Because we've ripped on this so much that it almost sounds like we're about to say the opposite of what the title of this episode is.
Well, the picks, I think the reason why we're ripping on this so much is because it is a good film.
Well, I'm sorry, Thomas. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say the acting in this is a huge part of it. I mean, Will Smith sells this role extremely well, and it is a well-acted film.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say, we spent the first 40 minutes talking about what we liked in this film.
That's true. That's true.
My biggest pick is in the little things that Will Smith does. As I said, when the dog's dying, it's the way he's singing, but he's choked up singing "Every Little Thing's Gonna Be All Right." It's in the little things where he's blowing kisses to his wife, or when he puts Ethan in his daughter's bedroom. And you see that he hasn't touched his daughter's bedroom. It's exactly the way it was when they left. Or when he flips out because he was saving the bacon. And how dare she cook his bacon? That was for a special whatever. Well, you never know. But he was saving that bacon for something. Or it's in the way that he keeps repeating, "I'm not going to let this happen." It's happened there, Robert. But I'm not going to let this happen.
When he's in the house and he sees the post on the door that says "Do not open till Christmas." Next door is a quarantine bag where a dead body is. He opens the door that says "Do not open till Christmas," and it's a child's room.
Yep, it's a nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again,
see how he feels.
He sells that reaction and the pain and the. Again, Will Smith is a very good actor, and in this role, he does a very good job of portraying emotions and giving this character life. I mean, this character is pretty much sold by him. I think you put almost any other actor in this role, as we mentioned at the beginning, you put Nicolas Cage in that role, do you think he would sell it?
No, I don't.
There's
be weird.
Yep. I think Denzel Washington could have played this role and probably done it well.
There's a few, yes. There's definitely a few. Some people.
I'm trying to think of some of the others that could pull this off, but you've got to have someone who like doesn't play themselves in every single movie and is able to play a range of characters. And that may sound odd to say about Will Smith, but he has played a range of characters. The man did play Muhammad Ali. He's not just playing Will Smith in every movie that he's ever in. Pursuit of Happiness is maybe his best role ever. But the man's talented. And you put him out here, you know. This may sound crazy. I think Chris Pratt could play the role. I think Chris Pratt could have pulled it off. I've seen him. I have more of a respect for him as an actor as time goes on and the range that he can pull. But the picks all come down to, and it's not just, it's great writing. Having Will Smith just completely quote Shrek, all the lines going on in the whole scene flawlessly, just shows you what's been going on in his life. And Thomas, as you said, how much the routine is, or when he's hitting golf balls off the aircraft carrier and he's basically, "I'm getting good."
Well, not just that, but his dog. I mean, he's been doing this enough that his dog is just going, "Okay, you're hitting golf balls, whatever. I've seen you do this before."
He takes the tennis ball with him and throws the tennis ball every day while he's waiting, sitting at his desk that he's set up. There is some masterful writing to allow Will Smith to give this tour de force as Robert Neville. And is Robert Neville or Nevin?
Neville.
Okay. For some reason, I thought I had it wrong for a second. There's masterful writing in this, too. The science is bad. There's a lot of bad science. There's a lot of bad details. But I'll accept all these contrivances because here's my best pick. I don't care about the bad science. I don't care about the contrivances. I don't care about the fact that the dog should have died 3 years ago. Or why is he driving with the sports car through clear streets? Because in the end,
it works and it's a good film.
You become engrossed with the character immediately and you feel his pain and the human emotion. For me, I've always said it's about character and it's about emotion and feeling that emotion. And this was a movie that made me hit. Here's the biggest pick. This movie made me hit pause and go find my dog and give my dog a hug and say, you're a good girl.
Well, it had an impact.
Yeah.
That's my biggest pick. I mean, I would to agree me, that's with high you. Praise for a movie.
I would agree with you because if a film can make you feel something, the film did a good job. I mean, I don't cry at many movies, but I will cry while watching Saving Private Ryan. It's a good film. This film doesn't make me cry, but it does make you think, it makes you feel, and it's a good film.
Yep. Well, I think that if we're at that point, might as well just rate it. How many, well, I was going to call it hypo scenes, but how many vampires do you give it?
My shortest rating ever, 8. It's a good film. It's got flaws, but the flaws don't matter. And you feel for Robert Neville and it hits you emotionally and well acted, well written. It's a solid 8.
All right. I'm giving it 8.5. It's a film that is a good film. It hits, it keeps you entertained. And sometimes when we have to watch films, you know, myself rewatch films sometimes to review them fresh, I don't like it. When it was I Am Legend, I'm like, okay, cool. I get to watch I Am Legend again. I like that film. True. Yep, I don't think this is a film that I can go, oh, I have to watch that. It's one of those films, ooh, flipping through the channels, I Am Legend. I'll watch that. So this is a film that I recommend and is entertaining. 8.5.
Yeah, I give it the same 8.5, maybe even a 9. That's a great way to put it, Thomas, that this is a film that if it's on, I will watch it again. And I'll do so gladly. For all its parts that seem weird, like how come there's an SR-71 on the aircraft carrier? That doesn't make sense to me. And for the other little things, why was that doctor so stupid? It wasn't enough to take me out of it. It wasn't enough to take me out of it. I understand why he was offering aid every day at noon. Maybe it was a way to keep his humanity just because he knew nobody was coming. He'd already given up. He even admitted we're it. So it was probably a humanity saving measure. But for that and all the other rips, this is a really great movie. And it honestly does show you kind of a last man or woman on earth type scenario, what that would be like, especially if there was a threat.
Well,
looming it.
Before you continue, I would hate to ruin your moment, but there is an SR-71 Blackbird on that aircraft carrier in New York.
Well, there's a reason for it. It's just not something they just plop there because they thought it was cool.
The New York City Space Air.
I withdraw. I withdraw that complaint because since I didn't know that, I thought they just plopped them there for the sake of looking cool. And I'm like, wait, why would you put that many jet fighters plus an SR-71 on an aircraft carrier in the bay of a city you were abandoning?
I believe it was a retired aircraft carrier that they turned into a museum and it has multiple aircraft on it. And I believe the Concorde is on a board there too.
Okay, that makes sense now. Never mind then. That makes sense.
Sorry to ruin it for you.
No, not really. It wasn't a killer. It wasn't like a, ooh, this is going to get everybody. It wasn't a, ooh, yeah, kind of thing. It was just, what the heck was that for?
Dig it.
Wow, Scott, you got to work on your low there. You got to, ooh, yeah, you got to lower it.
You learn something new every day, Mark.
Yep, I do. So I'd call this a success for us, especially coming off of some of the stuff we did 2 weeks ago, which was just dry, boring Ender and romance. But
yay, an entertaining film.
Well, that's why we called it I Am Legend, I Am Entertained. So what if you got any comments you want to throw at us, where do they go to, Scott?
ravinglunaticmedia.com, 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 where we're offering the Kama Sutra of Mannequin Fun. Ravinglunaticmedia.com. That's not for sale there. Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Stay sick, sickies.
Let's make sure history never forgets the name.
Sci-Fi Malady.
Got out.